This is the Sue Freeze Show, talking about life, relationships, and achieving.
It's not a big deal. Let it wash all the bugs off my windshield. Cause you're showing me that in you I'm free. And you're still the refuge that I've just got to get to. And
your host, Sue Freeze.
And it is a beautiful day. And you know, even if I didn't feel like it coming to the show today, listening to that song, just kind of, I don't know, it lifts your spirits. And just, I kind of picture being in a convertible car, driving down Pacific Coast Highway and just, you know, having the wind in the face and the sun, you know, shining down. And it's just a beautiful day. And even, you know, if it's not exactly that, maybe we just have to regroup. Maybe we just have to, you know, think about all the things that we have to be thankful for. And it can really put a smile on our faces. So no matter where you are or what you're doing, you know, I don't know what that is, but the Lord does. And before we get on this show, we always pray for ears to hear and the message to be clear and, you know, that it be God's words, not Sue's words, just me being used to deliver this message that God wants to deliver to you. So it is no coincidence that you're on the show with us today. And I'm so thankful and honored to be part of it. So thank you so much for joining the Sue Freeze Show today. And, you know, when I'm preparing for the show, I ask the Lord, you know, what is the message? What is it we want to accomplish today? And, you know, like anything in life, you get up in the morning, we only have so many days. We don't know a lot of the times how many days we have left or how many minutes we have left. But we have to make the most of every minute, don't we? And sometimes we just think we've got this incredible amount of minutes and maybe we don't. So let's make every minute count. So what does that mean? You know, the Lord says to love thy neighbor as thyself. You know, love thy God first and then love thy neighbor as thyself. And so we have to think about the intention. What is it we're doing that's going to portray that or be that or do that? Are you doing that? Or are you holding a grudge? Are you, you know, holding on to unforgiveness? Whatever it is that you're doing, we need to be focused on the main goal, the big goal. And is your life going to matter at the end? You know, is what you're thinking about and what you're holding on to, is it really going to matter in the big scheme of things? And sometimes it puts things in better perspective for us. I'm going to be, you know, doing a lot of, I don't know what you call it, just reading and talking about a book that was given to me by a friend of mine. His name is Bill Conine, and he's part of this group that I'm involved in. It's the Convene Group, and it's a biblical principle group of people that get together and talk about their business, about their personal life. And he gave me this book a while ago, and I'm just now picking it up. Timing is everything. And this book is so right on as far as me right now. And I believe that there are lessons in here that even if you're not a business owner, that in your personal life, the messages are so clear, they can be paralleled or transferred over to any walk of life. And so that's why I think that it's very important that I go forward with this, The Advantage, Why Organizational Health Trumps Everything Else in Business, but not only in business, but in our personal life too. We need to have organization. We need to know who's in charge. Right? There has to be a hierarchy, even though we don't like it sometimes. In a board of directors, there has to be one person that is the final say. There has to be one person that's got all that decision-making that has to lay on that person, whether it's male or female. A lot of times think it's always a male, but it's not anymore. You know, life has changed and it's not. So all of that pressure or all that responsibility is on whoever that person is that is put in a position of responsibility to make that final decision. Now, think about marriage. What does it say? You know, that the Lord holds the husband accountable. The Lord holds the husband as the responsible person for that marriage, for that family. That's a lot of burden and a lot of responsibility, and it doesn't come without sacrifices, of course. But in that, I would say that, you know, there are those that take that to the point of just do what I say and don't ask questions. And then there's men that'll say, okay, board of directors, you know, wife, children, whomever is involved, you know, here's the situation. If it's a family meeting, organizational meeting of the family, you could say, okay, here's the situation. Not everybody's picking up their, you know, picking up their own chores. They're not doing their own part. They're, you know, they're, the burden's not light because one person's doing more than the other people. So you could have this discussion, and then everybody would put in their information of what they feel would be best. Okay. And in that, after all of that, there would come to an understanding. We'd have an understanding of who's doing what and why, and then who going forward, how this is all going to work out. You get what I'm saying? This is in a family situation. Same thing applies in the business world, okay? You have a board of directors, or you have your key staff, and you get together and you have staff meetings, and you discuss who's doing what and why, and what we're going to do going forward, and you know, there's an accountability there, and everybody understands what the expectations are. Well, this book is talking about this situation of how you deal with this and what's most important. And so I'm just going to start there, and I had to get an overview a little bit to explain how this works. We need to have a cohesive leadership team. And, you know, there are areas of expertise. Everybody has their gifts that they bring to the table and their experience they bring to the table. And some people are brought onto the team because they are better with numbers. And then there's people that are better with words. And there's people that are better with people. And there's people that are better with operational systems, you know. And you need all these people. And it's, you know, they talk about in the Bible, it talks about, you know, there's a lot of different body parts in the organization. And not one is more important than the other, because we need all of them together to make the body work. And they're talking about ministry, they're talking about church, but physically and visually, we can see that the body, the fingers, the toes, the heart, the eyes, the ears, the nose, they're all important to the full picture of getting things done or getting from here to there. And so it's important that we understand that each have a part to play. And so you'd have to evaluate what your part in this puzzle is, obviously. In the work setting, in the team, you know, we talk about the gifts and everything, but this book is talking about having a healthy organization, and it kind of switches gears for me. Is, you know, everybody in business, you talk about business, the business model and what's important in business. But there's a lot of people that have all of the structure and everything working out well, but yet their business is still not healthy. The organization is not healthy. So the question is, how do we create a healthy environment? How do we create a healthy organization? And this book is kind of laying it out for us. And I'll tell you personally, this is really speaking to me, because we go through all these levels of understanding and there's still more to learn, which is the nice challenge. And it's, I say life is a journey, right? It is. It's a journey. And we're in this together. And learning is so important to the big picture, because we only know what we know and we believe off of what our experiences have been. So to step away from that or step out of that and to gain other knowledge creates a whole nother view, maybe a whole nother perception that can help us going forward to be bigger and better than we were the day before, which we're supposed to be striving for excellence in everything we say and do for the glory of God. So we need to always be learning, striving for excellence and learning. And so this book is helping me do that. If you're just tuning in right now, I am so thankful you're with us. This is the Sue Free Show on our flagship station, KKLA 99.5, who also is syndicated and goes to San Diego and Santa Maria, all over the world now through podcasts. And if you want to share this with somebody else, which I hope you do, please do, just tell them to go to Sue Free, spelled like fries, one word, .com. And when you go there, there's 5 years of podcasts with subject matter, ministries, dates, anything you want there. You can just pull up what you want, what's going to speak to you, and hopefully get encouragement and help and maybe a new perception or a new way of thinking, which would be really, really beneficial. And it makes everything worthwhile, especially when you connect with me on the Sue Free site and tell me about what's going on, something you heard, something that moved you emotionally. You've got something that triggered, something that caused a different reaction. And you know what? That encourages me. You know, my job on this show is to encourage you, but by you connecting with me and telling me what's going on in your life, and I read every single one, I promise. You know, when I do that, though, it encourages me to keep me going on. And we need to work and help each other, don't we? That's what it's about. So reading from this book, The Advantage, Here's what it says. The financial cost of having an unhealthy organization is undeniable. Wasted resources and time, decreased productivity, increased employee turnover, and customer attrition. The money an organization loses as a result of these problems and the money it has to spend to recover from them is staggering. When leaders of an organization are less than honest with one another, when they put the needs of their departments or their careers ahead of the needs of the greater organization, when they are misaligned, confused, and inconsistent about what is important, they create real anguish for real human beings, and they experience that anguish themselves too. Have you ever experienced this personally? I know I have. And in some ways, I think I've created this a little bit, and I'm working on fixing that. And thank goodness for this book. It's going to help me do that. So I'm hoping this is going to help you. Becoming a real team requires an intentional decision on the part of its members. I like to say that teamwork is not a virtue. It is a choice and a strategic one. That means leaders who choose to operate as a real team willingly accept the work and the sacrifices that are necessary for any group that wants to reap the benefits of true teamwork. But before they can do that, they should understand and agree on a common definition of what a leadership team really is. And here's the definition they give. Are you ready? A leadership team is a small group of people who are collectively responsible for achieving a common objective for their organization. Now, I'm just going to stop for a second because I'm going to think of ministry. You know, when you go, to a mission field, right? There is a goal. You know, we know why we're going where we're going, and we had to put sacrifice in to get the monies and to, you know, get the travel arrangements and to understand where the food's going to come from and health issues and all of that. We have to do all that. Collectively, everybody is responsible for achieving the common goal. So it means that, you know, somebody that is really gifted in one area, it doesn't mean that's all they do. It means that they're going to do whatever's necessary to make the goal happen, to achieve the goal of saving lives or putting children in wheelchairs or whatever it is, that's what's going to happen. So moving forward, discipline one on this is collectively responsible. What does that mean exactly? Collective responsibility implies more than anything else, selflessness and shared sacrifices from team members. What kind of sacrifices are they talking about in this book? Well, first are the tangible, literal sacrifices. These include standard things like budget, allocations of headcount, resources that need to be shifted from one organization, sub-organization, or department to another. Making these kinds of sacrifices is much easier to commit to, in theory, than in practice, because no leader likes to go back to his or her department and announce that bonuses are going to be smaller or headcount is going to be reduced in order to help out another department that needs it more. But that's what members of real teams do. There are sacrifices that team members have to make beyond these tangible ones, and they come about on a much more regular basis, often daily. Two big ones are time and emotion. Time and emotion. They're big ones, aren't they? Common objectives. Though this is pretty straightforward, it's worth stating that most of leadership teams' objectives should be collective ones. The important goal within the organization is to increase sales, then every member of the team shares that goal. It isn't just the responsibility of the head of sales. No one on a cohesive team can say, well, I did my job. Our failure isn't my fault. You ever been around that type of person and that type of team? This is another concept that plenty of leadership teams say they believe in, but that few really embrace. Most of them rely far too heavily on people working exclusively within their areas of expertise, handing out different objectives to different team members based on their titles and management responsibilities. And while there will always be a need for division of labor and departmental expertise, leadership team members must see their goals as collective and shared when it comes to managing the top priorities of the greater organization. Finally, if a team shares a common objective, a good portion of their compensation or reward structure, though not necessarily all of it, should be based on the achievement of that common objective. When leaders preach teamwork but exclusively reward individual achievement, they are confusing their people and creating an obstacle to true team behavior. That right there is a golden nugget. It needs to be digested. You know, you're going to have to chew that for a little while, think about it, and figure out how you can make this work. you have to actually break this down, don't you? Yeah, you have to look at every individual, what the main goal is, and then work backwards. With any goal, you have to figure out what the goal is and work backwards. And this is telling you that these are the things you got to look at and you're going to have to dissect. Okay, now that I put forward a general definition of what I mean by a leadership team, let's focus on the steps for building a cohesive one. At the heart of the process lie five behavioral principles that every team must embrace. This is where it's going to get really good. Are you ready? Okay. If you're just tuning in right now, you're tuning in to the Sue Free Show. And I'm so thankful that you've joined in. And thank you, San Diegans, for joining in. And if you know somebody that you think could benefit, tell them about the Sue Free Show and go to Sue Free, spelled like fries, one word, .com. And you can get this show and 5 years of shows, and hopefully it'll help you out. Okay, I really, that's the whole goal. So there is a pyramid here, and it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 items here. And at the bottom of this, it says trust. And I'm just giving you a little bit of an overview here. It says trust. The next one is conflict. The next one is commitment. The next one is accountability. And on the very top of this pyramid is results. And the thing about this that I thought was interesting is that, you know, I say that I want results, you know, that I that's the most important thing for me is results, is all this other stuff that we do, it has to be result driven. And results is at the top. There's some little tiles here that need to be addressed before you can get to that. And we might have a separate set of tiles in our mind and our belief system as to what it takes to make a team a team. And remember that I am saying that if you're listening and you're not in a business and you're not a business owner, you can apply this to your family, okay? Is trust important in your family? Do you want your children to believe your word is your word? You know, is that kind of important? Think back when you were a child. Did you want to believe that what your mom and dad said was truth? Did you hold on to that as a strong foundation? Was it always? Do you remember when it wasn't? What stands out? Right? So we want to treat others the way we want to be treated. And if you think back to your childhood, you know, because now you're a mom or a dad and you have little ones, right? And you have to remember the impact that you have. So sometimes when we go back and remember our own feelings and impact that our parents had on us, it helps us with understanding the power that we have with our tongue, the power we have with our actions, the power we have with putting our arms around them, giving them a hug or a kiss, right? It's powerful. So trust is there, and it's the widest of the foundations is trust. You cannot really have a strong foundation or a strong relationship without trust. You can't. And when you break a trust, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get it back. So it's something we hold dear, is trust. Second is conflict. How often do we have conflict in our personal lives, in our relationships? Lots. It's not about not having conflicts, because it's a guarantee we're going to have them. It's how we deal with them that makes the difference, isn't it? It's not that we're going to have them. It's what we do when we have them. How do we deal with it? Are we dealing it with love? Are we listening to the other person, trying to understand where they're coming from? Or are we just so strong and we believe we're so right that we don't care? Or we're not allowing us to show the other person that their feelings matter and that you do care about their feelings. It doesn't mean that you have to agree all the time, because we can't always agree. But does it mean that that person doesn't matter to you? And that's probably the more important thing, is showing that the feelings matter, that they matter, not that you agree. I know men that don't understand that. So if that's you, take it from me. I know what I'm talking about here. Commitment. Is commitment important? In workplace, is commitment important? Do we need to be there for one another at the workplace? Do we need to believe that this person's there for our backs too? I know for me, my employees, they need to have my back. I need to have their back. If it comes to them having a paycheck or me, guess who gets the paycheck? They do. I have to have their back, but I want them to have mine too. And customers, we got to have our customers' backs and their homes, right? Yes. Accountability. that is not so much fun in the personal world, being a mom or dad and having curfews and making sure your children are where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be, right? That's accountability, right? It's not always fun. Getting the grades they're supposed to get, turning in their homework, making sure they're eating right, who their friends are. Are they doing what they say they're doing, or are they doing something different? Are we called as parents to make our children accountable, to be raised up to where they're responsible adults? Yes, we are. And we're accountable to who? As a parent, we are accountable to God, because we've been placed in a position of taking care of these children for a time, teaching them, raising them up. That's our responsibility, and we're held accountable. And you know who's held accountable the most to the family? You got it, the father. The father is accountable to God for his family to either make it or not. Sorry, don't be mad at the messenger. It's just what it says in the Bible. And the mother is to be a partner. The woman didn't come from the man's foot or from the man's head. The woman came from his side, his rib, to be a partner. But the husband has the final say, and the husband is the one that is held accountable to God. Tough one for women, quite often, especially when we feel, me being a woman, especially when we feel like our feelings don't matter. You know, take into account, be considered. You know, a woman wants to be considered. It doesn't mean she always wants to win, because she might not always be right. But she wants to know, husbands, that how she feels matters, that it's important to you as a husband. And our children want to know that their feelings matter. So let's not discount that as a man. Okay? Somebody needed to hear that. We will be back with more of the Sue Freeze Show right after this break.
Hi, Sue Freeze, the termite lady here. It's been my privilege to serve my community for 32 years as owner of Ecola Termite and Pest Control. Family is one of the most important things in my life, so you can imagine my panic when my little boy, Tyson, stopped breathing for the first time when he was 2 years old. It was the most terrifying thing I'd ever experienced. In an instant, Tyson had become a statistic. 1 in 8 children in California who suffers from life-threatening asthma. Those of you who listen to my radio show understand that I'm not a victim. I'm a mover, I'm a doer, and I'm a believer. And so I did what I had to do. I set out to find out why Tyson was suffering those horrific asthma attacks, and the journey was powerful and illuminating. I learned so much about how asthma attacks can be prevented, how you can make your home a healthier, happier environment, and how you can emerge from challenging situations like this even stronger and more powerful than you ever could imagine. I've shared my family's story in my new book, Learning to Breathe, available now on my website, www.suefreeze.com. If you or someone you love suffers from asthma, this is a book you must read. Please order your copy today. And for more information about effective alternatives to traditional pest control, please call us at Ecola 800-332-2847. We'd love to help you take care of your home and your family too. Learning to Breathe, available now at suefreeze.com.
They're called the stealth bugs of the insect world, termites, every homeowner's nightmare. But a lot of KKLA listeners don't lose a moment of sleep over termites because of Ecola Termite and Pest Control. They are California's leading ecological alternative termite control company. You see, Ecola gets rid of termites by using family-friendly, poison-free alternatives like Electrogun that seeks out and eliminates the little rascals, microwave process for small areas, and their new Ecola Heat using clean hot air for entire walls. No embarrassing circus tent over your home. No poison gas, no bagging your food, or moving out for a couple of days. Ecola Termite and Pest Control gets rid of termites effectively and quickly. So call Ecola at 877-332-BUGS. 877-332-BUGS. Ecola. Powerful termite and pest control, as gentle as a butterfly. Ask about their 2-year warranty. Call 877-332-BUGS. You're listening to The Sue Freeze Show.
So, number one was building trust. How do we do that? You know, I say on this show that I'm vulnerable and I'm transparent on this show. And people say that they enjoy that in what I talk about, because I'm not talking about my personal issues because I want someone to feel sorry for me. Not at all. It's just that, you know, people can relate, or people can realize that, you know, oh gosh, maybe this person's been somewhere I've been, or maybe they can understand a little bit more than somebody that has not been through what I've been through. Maybe they can actually relate a little bit. And so there's a relatability with vulnerability. Say that three times fast. But there really is. So it says here, at the heart of vulnerability lies the willingness of people to abandon their pride and their fear, to sacrifice their egos for the collective good of the team. While this can be a little threatening and uncomfortable at first, ultimately it becomes liberating for people who are tired of spending time and energy overthinking their actions and managing interpersonal politics at work. So they are suggesting something here, and I have not done this, but they're suggesting personal histories. While truly vulnerable team members eventually have to get comfortable revealing who they are, they need to start in a non-threatening way. That's why during an off-site session, we take teams through a quick exercise where we ask them to tell everyone briefly a few things about their lives. In particular, we have them say where they were born, how many siblings they have, where they fall in the order of children, and finally, what the most interesting or difficult challenge was for them as a kid. Again, we're not interested in their inner childhoods, just what was uniquely challenging for them growing up. This only takes like 15 to 20 minutes, and it always works. No matter how many times I've done it with a group of leaders, I expect them to say, come on, you know, we already know all this about the person. This inevitably leads to a newly found sense of respect, because the admiration that comes when someone realizes that one of their peers endured and overcame a hardship or accomplished something remarkable. More important, team members begin the process of getting comfortable with vulnerability when they realize that it is okay, even gratifying, to tell their peers something about themselves that they had never mentioned or been asked about before. In addition to making people feel more comfortable being vulnerable, this discussion serves to level the playing field on the team. There is something powerful and disarming about hearing the CEO of a company talk about being bullied because he was a chubby kid, or that his family struggled with grave poverty. As a consultant, I always find it amazing to witness how quickly the dynamic of a team can change after a simple 20-minute exercise as people who thought they knew one another develop a whole new level of respect, admiration, and understanding regardless of their job, title, age, or experience. You know, I personally experienced this at a company meeting that I had, because, you know, I have these employees and they see me in one function in one area. And when I started telling them about when I was growing up, I was very, very, very skinny. I used to get ridiculed all the time that, oh, if the wind's blowing, Susie, you better hold on to a tree because you're going to blow away, or don't turn sideways because we won't be able to see you. You know, things like that. And, you know, you might think that's kind of funny, but it's really not to a person that's really skinny. You know, it kind of makes you feel like, you know, it just isn't funny. And, you know, moving forward with that, you know, when I wanted to go to camp, YMCA camp, and my parents couldn't afford to pay for me to go to camp. And so my mother says, Susie, I really want you to go, but I can't afford to get you the money to do this because we're working two jobs and blah, 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 blah. And so she said, you're going to have to sell candy covered peanuts. And you have to sell this many candy-covered peanuts in order for you to go. And at the time, I was thinking, gosh, the other kids don't need to do this. The other kids just have their mother that can just pay for it and send them. And so I would go door to door. And, you know, at first, I was kind of like embarrassed about it. And then as time went on, I realized that a lot of people were pulling for me to go on this camping trip, that they were pulling for me to go to this camp. And, you know, I actually earned my own way to go to this camp. And whenever I smell pine trees, I always remember how it was to go there and how I felt I think it was more important to me than it was the other kids that, you know, had their parents pay for it. It was more important for me. And do you know that's when I got saved? I got saved at this camp that I had to sacrifice and work hard to afford to go. And it's really a special time for me whenever I go to the mountains. And another part of this that I always got embarrassed about, and it even came from my family, is I had terrible table manners. so bad that I always put my elbows on the table. Shame on me. And when I went to this camp, they had this thing where if you put your elbows on the table, you'd have to sing this song and you would have to run around this glass lunch room that was filled with 300, 400 kids. And you'd have to run around the outside in embarrassment because you had your elbows on the table. And so, you know, I look back on that and how embarrassing that was. But now I look back and I'm thinking, my table manners are much better now. Thank you very much. And not only that, it's just that whole experience as I was being held accountable. I was being held accountable. I sacrificed to get there. I received the Lord there. So, you know, it's like I tell people this and they're going, really? Gosh, I didn't know that about you. And then I got home from that wonderful experience to find out that my mom and dad had decided while I was gone to camp that they were going to divorce. And so there's a whole nother thing going on there. Here I found the most beautiful thing. I found Heavenly Father, Jesus Christ, and he was going to fix everything at my home life. And then I come home and find out that my parents had took it upon themselves to make a decision. You know, and then my mom remarried to a drunk, and there was a lot of things that happened there. And I look back on all of this and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I learned so much during all of that. And when I talk to people about what I've been through, it changes how they think about me. And I know that this whole series of idea, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this with my employees. In fact, I already do, but not on this much of a personal level. I do have a personal relationship with my employees, and I like to know what's going on with them and what's important to them, because I think that's important, isn't it? It's important to know what's important to those that we care about. It is, isn't it? It's just like I could even take this a step further in business. Our customers, we need to listen carefully to what their needs and their concerns are, because when we do that, then we can better serve them, because we're called to be servants. Isn't it amazing how all of this works? You know, the parallels and all these things. So moving forward from the stories is profiling. It involves using a behavioral profiling tool that can give team members deeper insights into themselves and their peers. Have any of you ever used like Myers-Briggs or any of these personal surveys? And it's really interesting to just, you know, you probably already know everything they're telling you, but it kind of just cements things in your mind that, oh yeah, okay, this is where I am today. And sometimes do you find that in testing, it depends on where we are in life and what's going on in our lives as to what it's saying is important. For instance, somebody that's put in a position of authority or leadership versus somebody that's put in a position of nurturing, that, you know, it can change the way you answer the questions on the test. But the important thing about this is that I'm not using this with my work, and I need to. I need to do this with the people that were the key staff and whatnot so that we can understand. And here's what it says. The key to this usefulness of profiling tools is that the information that is uncovered is neutral. In other words, there are no good or bad types. Everything is valid, and every type of team member is as useful as the next. That may sound like something a kindergarten teacher would tell her students, but it's both true and important. Every person has many neutral tendencies that are useful and helpful to a team, and a few that are not. The goal is to get everyone on the team to identify and reveal those tendencies to their peers, both the practical purpose of having them understand one another and to help them get comfortable being transparent and vulnerable about their shortcomings and limitations. We all have them, you know. News to self, we all have them, and we need to understand that it's okay to have shortcomings. It's okay to have limitations. When members of a leadership team willingly acknowledge their weaknesses to one another, they give their peers permission to call them on those weaknesses. Ooh, that's interesting. It also serves to validate their strengths. So if you haven't done those tests, they're really good. Myers-Briggs is one that a lot of people rely on and trust. They're strength finders. There's a whole bunch out there with the internet. You can find anything you want right there. You're listening to the Sue Free Show on our flagship station, KKLA 99.5, and you can listen to us up and down the coast. Just look for us, and we're on iHeart and iTunes, and wow, it's amazing, isn't it? The next little segment here, it's long and drawn out, and basically what I'm going to say is we can give ourselves grace, but we think the worst in other people. And sometimes we need to just understand the weaknesses and the strengths, and it helps us stay in check on both levels. So it keeps everybody real. I like that. So too much vulnerability is the next paragraph here, and they're saying, is there any chance that there could be too much vulnerability? Can we say too much? And the answer by the author is no. And then in the next breath, it's so funny because sometimes in the book, the writer is referring to he, and then other times it's she. And in this regard, he's saying she would be wise to withhold information about her weaknesses, mistakes, or need for help. And I circled she because I thought it was so funny because CEO is he, and then women saying too much. Because isn't it true that females feel a lot more comfortable being vulnerable than a man does? Would you say that that's true? I would say that's absolutely true most of the time. You know, I can't do overall everybody all the time. But on the whole, men kind of protect and guard, you know, their manlihood. And it's difficult sometimes for them to be vulnerable, transparent, and sometimes even difficult to just say they're sorry and accept wrong. But you know what? The real man gets in touch with that and allows it to happen. You know, we have to be careful, but still. So in here it says, I suppose that if a team member were to come to every meeting with a laundry list of mistakes and weaknesses, that could certainly be a problem. But the problem, in fact, would be a lack of competence rather than too much vulnerability. Ouch. Finally, it's worth pointing out that vulnerability is not about a team member using the team as its own private therapy group. There is something uncomfortable and weird about a team member airing all of his, dirty laundry in front of the team. A measure of judgment and emotional intelligence is always required, and I found that the vast majority of leaders understand where to draw the line. Then it says the leader goes first. Okay, leaders. It means you go first. That means you're leading by example. We need to do that, don't we? And we need to be vulnerable and transparent. We need to let them know. So it says, as important as it is for all members of a leadership team to commit to being vulnerable, that it's not going to happen if the leader of the team, whether that person is the CEO, department head, pastor, or school principal, does not go first. If the team leader is reluctant to acknowledge his or her mistakes or fails to admit to a weakness that is evident to everyone else, there is little hope that other members of the team are going to take that step themselves. In fact, it probably wouldn't be advisable for them to do so because there is a good chance that their vulnerability would be neither encouraged nor rewarded. Okay, take that to the home life, okay? Does that mean that the leader would be the husband? So it means the husband has to go first in being vulnerable and transparent. Not always easy, is it? But I tell you what, the respect that's gained from your children and your wife, for your children to see that it's okay, and it doesn't mean, Dad, that you're going to be loved less, that you're going to be thought of less. It just means that you're real and that you're human and that you've got a heart and that you're, you know, it really takes some of the pressure off everyone else in the family, doesn't it? It takes the pressure off of not everybody having to be just perfect because we're not. We all have flaws. And it's good for the children to see that you've got them and you accept them and that you're loved anyway, right? So there you go. I don't know why right then the thought of addiction and all of those negative things came to mind, and I thought I needed to check that. So all I'm going to say there, the Holy Spirit just nudged me a little bit, just saying that, you know, if you have issues like that, obviously you might need more help, but you have to identify you have a problem, and then definitely you need to get the help you need so that you can be the leader for your family. You need to show them how to live their lives the way God would want you and them to live their lives. So if you need help, please ask for it. Ask for help. Ask for, identify the problem, say you've got a problem. That's the biggest step of all, is admitting that you're wrong, admitting that you've got a problem. Be vulnerable, be transparent, get the help you need so that you can be all you can be for your children and your wife and your family and God. Trust is just one of five behaviors that cohesive teams must establish to build a healthy organization or family. Only when teams build vulnerability-based trust do they put themselves in a position to embrace the other four behaviors, the next of which is the mastery of conflict. So what did that just say there? It says trust is the most important in having health in your marriage, health in your family, health in your team at work. Trust. I have expressed deeply and strongly about my word being my word at work. That if I tell somebody that this is going to happen, or if I tell somebody that this is what they can expect, I have to fight tooth and nail to make sure that what I said happens. And some of the people on my team, they don't understand why I feel so strongly about this or that or whatever, because there's other things that are playing. And I'm like, no, my word is my word. And I have to hold true to that. And so that's a trust issue, isn't it? And what I have found personally is people don't leave me unless they lose belief and trust in me. If they lose that faith, if they lose the belief in me, that's when they go. So it's imperative. It's important. It is so important in all relationships that those that you're in relationship with can trust you. And if you don't have trust, you don't have anything. You just don't. So understand how important it is. You know, and if there's a lack of trust, do whatever you can to gain it back if possible. And part of that is being vulnerable, transparent, and asking forgiveness. That's a big, big, big part. Somebody needed to hear that, probably more than one, I'm guessing. So mastering conflict, that's number two. And I said at the beginning that, you know, you need to know that you're going to have conflict. It's not a matter of having conflict or not having conflict. It's what do we do when it happens? What do we do? Okay. What do you do when you have conflict? Sometimes we need to take a step back. We need a time out. We need to breathe. We need to take time to just breathe, reassess the situation. Okay. That's really important. Fear of conflict is almost always a sign of problems. Of course, the kind of conflict I'm referring to here is not the nasty kind that centers around people or personalities. Rather, it is what I call productive ideological conflict, the willingness to disagree, even passionately when necessary, around important issues and decisions that must be made. But this can only happen when there is trust. When team members trust one another, when they know that everyone on the team is capable of admitting when they don't have the right answer, and when they're willing to acknowledge when someone else's idea is better than theirs, the fear of conflict and the discomfort it entails is greatly diminished. When there is trust, conflict becomes nothing but the pursuit of truth, an attempt to find the best possible answer. It is not only okay, but desirable. Conflict without trust, however, is politics, an attempt to manipulate others in order to win an argument regardless of the truth. Does conflict cause discomfort? Yes, it does. Even among the most trusting team members, there will always be a certain level of discomfort associated with disagreement. But it will be a healthy discomfort, a sign that there is productive tension around an issue that warrants discussion and debate. Overcoming the tendency to run from discomfort is one of the most important requirements for any leadership team. Same with home life. In fact, for any leader, every endeavor of importance in life, whether it is creative, athletic, interpersonal, or academic, brings with it a measure of discomfort. Calling to mind the old saying, no pain, no gain. I love that. And it's so true. And there has to be enough pain to cause someone to change. It's very interesting, but sometimes people will stay in a situation that's not comfortable, but the pain has to be worth the gain in order for a change to happen. It's pretty interesting, but it's true. And when we avoid necessary pain, we not only fail to experience the gain, we also end up making the pain worse in the long run. That's a golden nugget right there. Okay, if you're in a marriage, if this is your marriage, and there are issues that need to be addressed, you can try to sweep it under the rug. You can try to avoid it, try to not talk about the subject matter. You can try to not have this conflict. But it doesn't go away, news. News to you, it doesn't go away. So it's better just to address it. Address it. Have the timing right. Everybody fed. Everybody's, you know, got enough sleep. You know, you make sure you have enough time, that everything is peaceful, maybe find a peaceful place that can't get out of control, depending on, you know, the weight of the issue. But usually these ones that we try to sweep under the rugs are ones that are really important to us. And it can make all the difference in the world if we just address it. So don't wait on this, okay? Whatever the issue is, sometimes writing it down really helps. Sometimes writing down how you feel, what you think, and giving it to the other person and letting them think about it before you address it is sometimes helpful, because your facial expressions, your body language is not in front of them. And sometimes they have a little time to digest what's being said. And maybe reading it on a page takes some of the power or emotion out of it. So that might work for you. It's just a thought, maybe. And in the workplace, sometimes we can do that too. In fact, there are employees that will come to me and they've thought about a problem. I always say, if you've got a problem, have a solution, right? And they need to think about it because I want them to be, their brain has to be wrapped around it, you know, like mine needs to be. But they've had, let's say they've had 2 days to think about it or 3 days, and they'll come to me and they want me to make a decision right here, right now. And I'm like, okay, let me ask you this. How long have you thought about this issue? And they'll say, oh my gosh, I've thought about this for a week. And I said, can I have a week? You had a week. Can I have a week? And they laugh normally and they'll say, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay. So that's kind of nice to be able to do that. So we've got 1 minute. So, you know, in 1 minute, I'm not going to get into the next part. The next part is conflict avoidance. And we'll go into that next week on the Sue Freeze Show. And I just want you guys to realize that I'd really like to hear from you. I really would. And I'd like for you to share this show. If you know somebody that would like to advertise on this show, I would love to connect with that person and get them on the air and sponsor the show and advertise. Maybe you've been thinking about advertising as a business owner, but you're just not sure fund-wise, you know, if this would make sense for you. Believe me, I can help you in this department. I've been advertising a long time, and I do know a little bit about this. So if you want to call me and just talk to me about this, let's just chat, okay? Maybe coffee talk. I don't know. You know, let's just have a conversation and I can help you with that. If you know somebody that needs something, you know, I'm here. I'm a listening ear, and you can connect with me by going to Sue Freeze, spelled like fries, one word, .com. My son makes fun of me for that. He mimics me on that, and I see his face every time now when I'm seeing this. James 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. Bring all your requests to God, and he will help you with anything that you have. Just ask him. He says to ask, and you shall receive. Until next week, be a blessing to someone each and every day. Look for the opportunity to do that and make your first thing a connection with God. Okay? Be a blessing. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Sue Freeze Show, sponsored by E. coli, Termite, and Pest Control Services.
It's that time of the year when bugs multiply like crazy and start looking for a home, your home. Ants, spiders, fleas, earwigs, termites, and a lot of other creepy crawly critters, even rats and other varmints. It's time to call E. coli, Termite, and Pest Control Services. They offer complete ecological pest control of rodents and insects. E. coli has one-time services, ongoing monthly services, their most popular and economical every other month service, and even quarterly service for occasional pest problems. E. coli keeps rats and mice out and eliminates insects in their nests. It's the most effective way, and their termite control is legendary. So call E. coli today for a free estimate of complete pest control at 877-332-BUGS. No more creepy crawly critters like ants, spiders, fleas, earwigs, termites, rats, and other pests. Call them at 877-332-BUGS, 877-332-BUGS. E. coli, powerful pest control services, as gentle as a butterfly. Ask about their 2-year warranty. Call 877-332-BUGS.